From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on May 23rd, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Happy Memorial Day weekend! Now, I hope you do take some time this weekend to reflect and remember those men and women in our armed forces who lost their lives in the defense of our country and our freedoms. Thank you to all of them and their families. And a happy early birthday to Amy Crouch.
We love you.
While AT makes sure this podcast sounds good, Amy makes sure that This Week in South Carolina looks and sounds good too, as well as all of our live productions. And she puts up with me too, folks, just like AT. And so like we were talking about Memorial Day, our May 28th episode will drop later that day since we will be off Monday for Memorial Day. So we will be in your feeds later on May 28th. Stay tuned for that. We're not going anywhere. So enough about future episodes. Let's look at what's on this episode of The Lead. We have breaking news out of the U.S. Supreme Court over the first congressional district map that a lower court ruled as a racial gerrymander. The Supreme Court says, nah. We also have an update on the first congressional district Republican primary race from Victoria Hansen and new polling, folks. We got some data for you.
Data!
Also, former Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley jumps on board the Trump train. You need to put a train whistle right there. Close enough. Planes, trains, and automobiles, tell us how you're getting around this Memorial Day. Maybe you're stuck in traffic listening to us. I don't know how you're doing it. It's like people that listen to me at the gym. But if you're listening and you have something to say, say it at 803-563-7169. We love open communication, not just here at the pod, but in life in general. See something, say something, folks. 803-563-7169. Starting off the pod with some major breaking news here, folks. That's right, the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday ruled 6-3 in overturning a lower court's ruling that the first congressional district map was an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. This decision in Alexander v. South Carolina State Conference of the NAACP allows the state to continue using the 2022 map for the Lowcountry's first district, which was drawn by the legislature to make it more conservative based off of the 2020 census. Just a good old-fashioned gerrymander this time. Now, writing for the majority, Justice Samuel Alito said, quote, "The state contends that the district court committed both legal error and clear factual error in concluding that race played a predominant role in the legislature's design of District 1. The state's principal legal argument is that the district court did not properly disentangle race from politics. Because this argument, at bottom, attacks the factual basis of the district court's findings, we dispose of this case on clear error grounds. For that reason, the district court clearly erred in finding that the legislature deliberately sought to maintain a particular black voting age population just because the maps that produced the sought-after partisan goal all had roughly the same BVAP." And I'm going to continue reading from Alito's opinion here. "Third, the district court found it telling that many predominantly black Charleston precincts were moved out of District 1 and into District 6. But because of the tight correlation between race and partisan preferences, this fact does little to show that race, not politics, drove the legislature's choice. The Charleston County precincts that were removed are 58.8% Democratic. Thus, the legislature's stated partisan goal can easily explain this decision, and the district court therefore erred in crediting the less charitable conclusion that the legislature's real aim was racial. Why would Roberts have used racial data with the associated legal risks as a proxy for partisan data when he had access to refined sub-precinct-level political data that accounted for voter turnout and electoral preferences? The district court provided no answer to this obvious question." Quote, and again, that was Justice Samuel Alito writing there in his opinion, which was supported by Chief Justice John Roberts, Justices Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Justice Clarence Thomas joined in most of the opinion and penned his own as well. But in her dissent, Justice Elena Kagan backed the three-judge district court decision, which came following a 9-day trial and ruling that the map needed to be redrawn since race was the determining factor for how the new map lines were drawn, not past voting data as the state contends. Kagan wrote, quote, "This court must give a district court's view of events, quote, significant deference, quote, which means we must uphold it so long as it is plausible. The challengers introduced more than enough evidence of racial gerrymandering to support the district court's judgment. First, the majority, though ostensibly using the clear error standard, effectively inverts it whenever a trial court rules against a redistricting state. In the majority's version, all the deference that should go to the court's factual findings for the plaintiffs instead go to the losing defendant because it is presumed to act in good faith. That clear error standard tells us when we disagree with a trial court's view of the facts, we are the only ones likely to be wrong. So we should make triple sure that we are correcting, not creating an error before we reverse. Kagan continued by saying, quote, second, the majority invents a new rule of evidence to burden plaintiffs in racial gerrymandering cases. As of today, courts must draw an adverse inference against those plaintiffs when they do not submit a so-called alternative map, no matter how much proof of a constitutional violation they otherwise present. It is that the majority defers to the assertions of the state defendants, the side that lost below. Invoking a, quote, presumption of legislative good faith, the majority insists that when confronted with evidence that could plausibly support multiple conclusions, a court must draw the inference that cuts in the state's favor. So over and over, the majority puts its thumb on the scale against the district court. Each time it takes up a piece of evidence, the majority declares that there is a possibility of seeing it the state's way. In closing, Kagan said, this odious practice of sorting citizens built on racial generalizations and exploiting racial divisions will continue. In the electoral sphere, especially where ugly patterns of pervasive racial discrimination have so long governed, we should demand better of ourselves, of our political representatives, and most of all, of this court. Respectfully, I dissent. Quote. That was Elena Kagan there writing for the dissent, which was backed up by Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Now, Lee Aden, who is the senior counsel at the Legal Defense Fund, who argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, told reporters on a media call on Thursday that the ruling will make it harder to bring racial gerrymandering cases to the high court now. This whole case involves the 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, not the Voting Rights Act. So there's a bit of a difference here compared to other voting access cases. Here's Aden.
So for anyone who lives in South Carolina and is being honest, CD1 as drawn is racially discriminatory. Black voters were harmed in service of the majority party entrenching itself in power in CD1. To avoid that reality, the majority of the Supreme Court issued a disgraceful decision today that repackages that fact and a volume of facts that underpin it to characterize the bleaching of more than 30,000 Black voters out of Charleston County in CD1 as merely partisan, a partisan fight, which the legislators have publicly disclaimed during the map drawing process. The majority ignores and rewrites the facts the district court found, substituting itself as a fact finder. In case after case, the Supreme Court has said that that is not its job to act as a fact finder, yet the majority did so here. The same is true for the majority's rewriting of case law that has governed racial gerrymandering cases.
Congressman Jim Clyburn, who represents the neighboring 6th District, which is the only Democratic district in the state. Clyburn's district lost population according to the census, which then led to a redrawing of lines to include more of the growing 1st Congressional District represented by Republican Nancy Mace. Clyburn said that the court's decision, quote, is further affirmation that this court has chosen to disenfranchise Black voters and rob us of our fundamental access to the ballot box. Equitable representation is the hallmark of a healthy democracy, and in this case, the Supreme Court is attempting to steer the country back to a dark place in our history. Clyburn continued by saying, I am old enough to remember the indignities suffered by my parents and other Americans who looked like them. It's clear now more than ever that efforts to disenfranchise Black voters and silence our voices are running rampant, quote. Now, Taiwan Scott, the only individual plaintiff and who is also a member of the Native Gullah community, said that he and the other plaintiffs will push forward on this case as part of it, dealing with voter dilution, was remanded to the lower courts for clarification.
Very, very disturbed about the outcome. It's as though we don't matter, but we do matter. And our voices should be heard. It's sad to see the decision after, you know, 3 federal judges ruled that we would racially gerrymandered. But we won't stop. We continue to move forward. We continue to stay positive. We continue to challenge the injustices.
Governor Henry McMaster told reporters on Thursday that the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court was appropriate.
Well, I guess we always will have concerns about elections, but I think this, the Supreme Court, I think, was clear. I think they examined the question and followed the law. I have not read it, but I know about it, and I think they made the right decision.
State Senate President Thomas Alexander commended the U.S. Supreme Court in a statement saying, quote, "As I have said throughout this process, our plan was meticulously crafted to comply with statutory and constitutional requirements, and I was completely confident we would prevail." With its decision today, the Supreme Court affirmed the hard work of South Carolina senators and the product they produced as constitutional, quote. So what does this all mean to you, specifically SC01 voters? Well, a lower court in March already ruled that the 2022 map would be used in the June 11th primary since it was too late to change ballots, locations, etc. Now, this is the same map, obviously, that was used in the 2022 general election when Congresswoman Nancy Mace beat Democrat Dr. Annie Andrews by 14 points compared to Mace's narrow 1.2-point win over incumbent Democrat Joe Cunningham back in 2020. So you see how this redistricting thing works right there? 1.2 points versus 14 points.
Yes.
It's way less competitive than it was back in 2020 because that's how it was drawn, right? What was once a toss-up district is now Republican, albeit with some swing tendencies there. So let's look more into the Republican side of that race.
Okay.
Right? That's why primaries are so important to vote in, because you have the ability to shape who will be on the ballot in November. We are about 3 weeks away from the June 11th primary day. And again, that primary election is for all 46 Senate members, 124 State House members, and 7 members of our congressional delegation. There are no statewide offices, there are no U.S. senators on the primary ballot, so a little bit of an off year, but still very important. Now, not everyone has someone in their party challenging them for their party's nomination, and some seats are also wide open, like the 3rd Congressional District seat Jeff Duncan is vacating. While that race is a big one we are watching, as well as the neighboring 4th District Republican primary, we continue our look at the competitive 1st Congressional District in the Lowcountry, that's right, where Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace is looking to hold onto her seat for a third term. Her biggest challenge comes from 2018 gubernatorial candidate and former DHEC head Catherine Templeton. For more on that race, here is South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen.
She has represented the Lowcountry in Congress for nearly 4 years.
My name is Nancy Mace. That's Mace like the pepper spray.
And Republican Nancy Mace appears to have no fear as she fights to keep the coastal 1st District seat. Critics call her National Nancy because she frequently appears on national television.
Let's bring in Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace from South Carolina.
Mace says yes, she gets a lot of attention.
I actually turn down more national interviews than I give.
But she insists it's because she says what she thinks.
I don't toe the Republican Party line when they're wrong. And I call my own colleagues out on it time after time. And sometimes that gets me in hot water, and that's okay.
Mace's Republican primary challengers say it's not okay to further divide the party. They accuse the 46-year-old of creating chaos for cameras. Last year, Mace voted to oust House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, then wore a white T-shirt with a bold red letter A, as in adulterous, on the front.
I'm wearing the scarlet letter after the week that I just had last week, being a woman up here and being demonized.
Mace doesn't back down, she doubles down. The two-term incumbent who nearly flipped a seat in 2020 says she is the only Republican who can win the general election. She says she's tough on immigration, supports exceptions to abortion bans, and can once again invoke the name Donald Trump.
We've come a long way, but he endorsed my reelection campaign. He's fully on Team Mace.
The former president once called Mace nasty and disloyal. She blamed him for the deadly Capitol attack.
Look, I don't know how many enemies she's made in Washington.
53-year-old labor lawyer Catherine Templeton is challenging Mace in the June primary. The former DHEC director and state labor secretary says she's angry Mace broke party ranks to oust McCarthy.
For 3 weeks, we didn't have a speaker, and it doesn't matter who the speaker was or who we ended up with. We did not have a speaker in the United States of America, which legally left us flat-footed. 3 or 4 days later, Hamas attacked Israel.
Templeton says she hears from constituents who are angry, too, and helped her campaign outraise the incumbent during the first quarter. The two women have sparred over immigration and abortion. But Templeton says the Lowcountry has other issues, like aging infrastructure and inadequate hurricane evacuation routes. She also touts her experience in business.
As president of U.S. Brick, we fought and broke up a market controlled by foreign companies.
Templeton says it's time to get down to business in Congress. She's embarrassed by Mace's conduct.
We want a serious adult who finds honorable ways to govern, to go to Washington and be a workhorse, run to work, not to camera.
Also running to replace Mace, political newcomer Bill Young.
And so when Hamas attacked Israel in October, I really started to take a look and see, you know, what our current representative is doing.
The Marine veteran who served in Iraq says he wasn't impressed.
She sticks her finger up and goes to the political winds.
Young says he can better serve Lowcountry veterans. He founded a center to help homeless vets after losing several friends to suicide. Like his opponents, Young is concerned about immigration and inflation, but also the future of Lowcountry shrimpers. He's spreading his message door to door.
You know, South Carolina is a high-touch political state. They want you to shake their hand. They want you to ask for their vote. They don't want to see commercials blasting each other.
Voters head to the polls June 11th.
Thanks as always, Victoria. And to add on to the 1st Congressional District, which runs from the Charleston County border with Georgetown County down to Hilton Head Island and inland a bit, depending on your area, we have new polling on that race.
Data.
That's right, a new Emerson College polling / the Hill poll of the June Republican primary in our 1st Congressional District finds that Nancy Mace has 47% support, with Templeton at 22% and Bill Young at 7%. 24%? They're undecided. Are you one of those people out there? Are you undecided? It's okay. You're allowed to be. Do your research. Look into it. We've got a couple more days until the June 11th primary. Now, Spencer Kimball, executive director of Emerson College Polling, said, quote, with just under 3 weeks until the South Carolina primary elections, Mace holds a significant lead over her primary challengers. Mace's support is strongest among voters over 70, 53% of whom support the representative, voters without a college degree at 51%, and male voters at 49%. A plurality of SCO1 Republican voters, 43%, say former President Donald Trump's endorsement of Mace does not impact their vote, while it makes 37% more likely to vote for her and 20% less likely to support the congresswoman. Speaking of support for and from Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, folks, the former Republican presidential candidate whose stump speech I can recite, I bared sub-zero temperatures to cover her campaign for all you news-hungry listeners out there just to take and take and take. Anyway, well, she said Wednesday that while she might have been the last person standing between Trump and the inevitable nomination, she's going to go ahead and vote for him. Here's about a minute of that.
As a voter, I put my priorities on a president who's going to have the backs of our allies and hold our enemies to account, who would secure the border, no more excuses, a president who would support capitalism and freedom, a president who understands we need less debt, not more debt. Trump has not been perfect on these policies. I've made that clear many, many times. But Biden has been a catastrophe. So I will be voting for Trump. Having said that, I stand by what I said in my suspension speech. Trump would be smart to reach out to the millions of people who voted for me and continue to support me and not assume that they're just going to be with him. And I genuinely hope he does that.
Now, Haley gave those remarks at the Hudson Institute, a conservative Washington think tank, where Trump's former United Nations ambassador is now a fellow. These were part of Nikki Haley's first public remarks since she suspended her campaign following Super Tuesday in early March. And she still has folks voting for her in state primaries, most recently Indiana, where she grabbed 21% of the vote on May 7th. Haley gave a speech on the dangers of national security weakness and with a lot of nods back to her campaign speech, including deeper digs here at some Republicans as well.
Securing the border is a national necessity. Our safety and security demand it. But Republicans are wrong when they say we have to fix the border before doing anything else. We shouldn't pretend we can only solve one problem at a time. If that's how we think, we have a long list to get through. We need to fix our broken education system. We need to end inflation and give working families relief. We need to get runaway welfare spending under control. We need to stop the crime that's sweeping college campuses and destroying our cities. Do these Republicans want us to ignore those issues too? Only until we deal with the border? Or is it just support for Ukraine they claim is getting in the way of dealing with our border? This is America. We can do these things at the same time. In fact, we have to. If we try to tackle them one by one, it'll be decades before we finally get serious about our enemies. By that point, they'll be even stronger, but we'll be weaker. And defending ourselves will be more expensive, not less. When your enemies are preparing to storm the beach, you don't bury your head in the sand. I also agree that we should cut foreign aid. At the United Nations, I dealt with plenty of countries that hate America, then put their hand out and asked for money. I fought to stop them from getting a cent, and I support cutting foreign aid even more. But sending weapons to Ukraine and Israel isn't foreign aid. It's an investment in the world in which authoritarian dictators cannot run roughshod over free countries.
While Haley is falling in line with others who ran against Trump in the primaries, she's doing so because, well, she kind of has to. She just met with 100 of her top dollar donors, her most loyal donors in Charleston last week, and while it was reported that Trump didn't come up during the two-day retreat, kind of find that hard to believe, it's obvious that she is walking that fine line of supporting her party's nominee, who she has cordially dissented with in the past, even though he has attacked her and her family, and also keeping her eye on a future run, which she is well positioned to do. So, welcome to politics, folks. And no more quotes, I'm done reading, except for a little hot tidbit for you to talk about while you're driving down the interstate somewhere in a gas guzzler. Close enough. That's right, we're sending you off on this extended weekend with a look at gas prices. The current average price for a gallon of regular unleaded gas is $3.21. You're going to say, Gavin, that's so high, but in fact, it's 8 cents lower than it was a month ago, but still 5 cents higher from a year ago. So at $3.21 a gallon, that's still far below the national average of $3.61. Folks, just drive safe out there. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We need a little break from the news, A.T. Shire.
That was a lot of quotes. That was a lot of quotes there for you.
A lot of reading.
Yeah, Gavin did a lot of reading, a lot of quotes, took a lot of takes. I'll tell you a lot of takes. But
take as many as it could have.
It could have been more. It could have been worse.
It could have been a lot worse.
Gavin, I'm so happy to be here with you.
I'm happy you're here. It's good to have happiness again. And I mean that sincerely and honestly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that, the quotes, they do take time, so we're going to do a quick call.
A quick little phone call. Okay. Hopefully it's someone like Lizzie to pump up our spirits.
Okay, are you ready, Gavin?
Only if it's good news.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, Gavin and AT, it's Joan from Myrtle Beach checking back in. I just want to say, of course, I love the podcast and that coverage of the State House and the upcoming primaries. Excellent work, as always. And more importantly, to talk to AT and Caitlin, congratulations. Rena Sophia, what a beautiful, beautiful name. I'm not a parent, but I'm the oldest of 9 children. I changed a lifetime of diapers by the time I was 14. So I have some big sister advice. If the baby is in a large, noisy family gathering, you know, lots of craziness, which can happen, and starts crying and you just can't calm her down, take her into a quiet, dark room and just whisper, hum a little bit, cuddle her close, and it will calm her down and calm you down. So that's the advice from Myrtle Beach. Keep up all the good work. Love you guys. Bye.
Joan from Myrtle Beach, thank you for that call. What
thank
a beautiful
you.
Call.
Yes.
I need to get back to the Grand Strand, speaking of Myrtle Beach. We got to get back out there. We got to go golf.
Spring break.
Coast.
Golf. Come on.
And I love that she also loves your name for your baby, Rena Sophia. Sophia.
Yeah, she is beautiful.
Now, Joan says that she's not a parent, but AT, yeah. we are going to give her the honorary title.
Yes.
Oldest of nine?
When
you are a parent, Joan.
When you're the oldest of nine, you're a parent of children that you didn't have.
Yeah. With no iPads back then. She had no iPad to throw in front of those
exactly.
kids.
Exactly right. So you get the honorarium, you get the degree, you can put it on your wall. It's honorary. Good for you, Joan. I think that's great advice.
Yeah, I respect that.
But it's only me, Caitlin, three cats, and Rena at the house. So it's not that noisy.
Yeah.
But like when she is sleeping, I'm not going to lie, I do try to be a little noisy. So it doesn't have
just
to
get
be
her
like.
Used to it.
Yeah. I'll run a vacuum cleaner underneath her and she stays asleep. I got to say. Yeah. Old girl, she stays asleep.
Your hardest part is just making sure when she falls asleep that you get her.
Yes.
Off of you there, so you there, can move.
There are crucial moments, as anyone who's ever had to try to get a baby to sleep knows. Like, you can be as loud as you want when they're asleep and when they're awake, but in these moments in
the
between.
The twilight, yeah.
Exactly. You're like, ooh, this is the 3 to 5 minutes where you have to be quiet. Otherwise, she's waking up and screaming.
Yeah.
So, like, we do try to be like, okay, this moment, Caitlin, don't unload the dishwasher.
Yeah. I constantly live in that twilight phase.
Yes.
Where
Gavin,
I'm in a constant state of volatile emotion.
I try to swaddle Gavin, and he just works his way out every time. He thrashes.
I got a type.
Oh, it's crazy. He just won't take a bottle. He will not use pacifier, and he will not stay in a swaddle. Rena, on the other hand, she's perfect.
I'm
she's
complicated
great.
Like that. At yeah, 37, I'm complicated.
There are a lot of complicated things. What's not complicated, Gavin, is this has been a long show.
It's been a long show.
We gotta hit this outro. Gavin, go sit by a pool this weekend, please.
I will. Okay? I will do that for our listeners. I'm going to make sure I do that.
Okay, so hit the outro, please. All
thank
right?
you. Thank you, Joan, for calling. That was a sweet message there. We would love to hear some more advice. 803-563-7169. You guys can always call us and give us your thoughts, your hot takes, any number of things. We're willing to listen. And you can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. This feeling is not going away.
See, that's good, right? So I'll write that time down.